Reality TV has hit a new high on Hulu. From executive producer Jimmy Kimmel, the all-new Hulu original series High Hopes is finally here for your viewing pleasure. High Hopes follows two budding entrepreneur brothers and their hilarious, half-baked, literally, employees at one of the fastest-growing cannabis dispensaries in Hollywood. This workplace comedy showcases the highs and even more highs of the competitive marijuana industry. You will absolutely fall in love with the quirky characters as they pursue career aspirations, love, and fame, all under a slightly hazy cloud. If you know, you know. All episodes of the new reality series High Hopes are now streaming only on Hulu. This is absolutely a show I'm getting behind. Hello, everybody. Welcome to my fucking show. And thank God it's my show because I don't think anyone could deal with the mood that I'm in right now. I can't tell if I'm happy, if I'm sad. I don't know if it's the Mexican Ambien I took last night. I don't know if it's the fucking meters order that I had to, you know, put in 78 times. It just wouldn't work and I was craving it really bad. I feel like a little bit loopy, I guess you could say, which is actually my favorite state to be in because I have the most overactive fucking brain. And I walk around with crippling anxiety, which I do have a prescription for, but no health insurance. And so I like to feel sedated. That sounds so fucking bad. Not all the time. So should I be recording right now? Probably not. I'm absolutely still in a little bit of an Ambien daze. And I know that because you are absolutely supposed to take that shit, I don't know, when you for sure have 8 hours of sleep that you can get. And I took that thing knowing I had fucking 4. So I was just on a recent trip to Mexico. And if you don't follow me, it's a few and a half. Plug. And the thing is everybody knows when you go to Mexico, you fucking stock up on drugs. That's like common fucking knowledge, correct? Maybe it's not. For those of you who don't know, you poor, unfortunate souls, if you ever go to Mexico, you can walk into the local pharmacy. They're fucking all over the place. You can get your Xanax for $5, your Adderall, your fucking Tramadol, which that's like really scary. I've like seen people take that and then they have like Tramadol shakes and it's like terrifying. I'm not down. But I mean, all these drugs are scary, right? So I really recommend it. If you do want to get something, don't condone drug use. And yes, this entire fucking podcast will be hypocritical and won't make any fucking sense and contradicting. Deal with it. All right. So I have this thing recently where I cannot fall asleep on Tuesday nights. And I mean that. I don't take drugs to go to sleep, but it got to a point where I had to ask my friend if I could borrow some of her Xanax. And I took like an entire Xanax bar. And that was not enough to put me to sleep, okay? And I have a low tolerance. So when I was in Mexico, we stop at this pharmacy and I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to get some Ambien just to have in my back pocket in case I need it. I don't like sleeping pills. I think they can be very addicting. I think once you're addicted, it's really hard to get off of them. I don't give a fuck, all right? I would just wanted it for maybe every Tuesday night or every other Tuesday. Long story short, I'm with Alex and we are hanging out. No, excuse me, hanging out. We're fucking working. And we go to bed. Alex falls asleep per usual, fucking right away. I'm just laying there staring at the ceiling and I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Pop the Ambien in my mouth. Did I look at the milligrams? Did I look at, you know, side effects, how it could react with other drugs? Nope. I just popped it in and it was like just a Russian roulette situation, how I'm going to feel. So when I tell you guys It was like 20 or 30 minutes after taking it. And all of the sudden, every single thing in the room became double. I saw two doorknobs, fucking two televisions, two windows, double of fucking everything. And it was the most bizarre fucking thing. I woke up Alex, and at a certain point, I asked Alex if she could see airplane wings in the corner of the room. So, highly recommend if that's your sort of thing. Very trippy. As you guys know, I'm not big on the hallucinogen. So that was like a new thing for me. And Mexican Ambien, one hell of a fucking drug. So, Sleuths, I cannot fucking wait to get into this guest that I'm about to have on, Robert Green. He is just the most savage, brilliant guest like I think I've ever had on. His advice could rub you the wrong way, but you know what? You need to grow up. You need to deal with the facts, as do I. So with that, let's fucking get into it. Now this is my kind of content right here. From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challengers, starring the absolute queen herself, Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach who has taken her husband, Art, and transformed him into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt him out of his recent losing streak, she makes him play a challenger event, close to the lowest level of the pro tournament. But her strategy takes a turn when he finds himself standing across the net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend, Patrick. Past and present collide, and tensions run high. Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? See Challengers only in theaters April 26. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, everybody. I am joined by Robert Green, one of the most brilliant authors of our time, really, Robert. He has written 6 international bestsellers and is referenced by a lot of rappers in their music, including Jay-Z and Kanye West. So, Robert, I'm so happy to have you here. I have a lot I want to go over. A little bit of background. I was given your book for my birthday 2 years ago.
Wow.
Yes, I was in a really low point in my life. I had dealt with some, you know, public smearing and just like a lot of trauma. And I was really in a place where I hated the world. And I remember my girlfriend gave me your book.
Which book?
The 48 Laws of Power.
Okay.
And I remember and not to be rude, but I remember thinking to myself, oh, it's like another self-help book. And like, you know, I'll like add it to like all the books I've been given. And I started reading it and it's ruthless. It's ruthless, you know? In the best way.
Well, you're wearing a shirt that says greedy, so I can get that. Yeah.
You already know. You already know what goes on over here. So yeah. It's really quite ruthless. Robert, in fact, did you know that here in Utah, your books are banned in the prisons?
I've known that for many years. Yeah.
Okay.
Not just several of my books are banned in prisons in Utah and in other states as well.
Wow. Okay. So if that gives anyone listening an idea of, you know, just how good these books are, right? So, Robert, I also want you to know, we actually have a lot in common. And you might not know that because I give a lot of advice to my listeners that could be taken as very unhealthy or toxic. And I get a lot of shit for it, but here we are. We're just telling people what works, you know?
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
So I really wanted to talk about your book, The Art of Seduction. And it's basically, as the title says, it's all about seducing someone and how to do that.
Right.
And you said seduction is about power and manipulation as much as it is about romance.
Right.
And I just love that you pointed that out, because I talk to a lot of women and men, actually, and they say, I'm so done playing games. I'm exhausted, you know, with the right person, I won't have to play games. And I always tell them, you might not want to play them, but it's just how it works. And so I wanted to kind of get your take on that and why you talk about this power and manipulation and what you would say to people who are like, I'm done playing games when dating.
Well, you're always playing a game, no matter what. You're not even aware of it. You're not even conscious of it, but you're continually playing games. How often do you exactly speak your mind to the person that you're involved in a relationship? You're constantly tailoring what you say to not hurt their feelings, to get them to do what you want, et cetera. So you're never being completely honest. And in the period when you're beginning a romance, when you're beginning the dating process, that's when things are most like a game, where you dress in a certain way that you normally wouldn't dress to impress the other person. You take them to special places that have a kind of heightened presence, a sort of slightly theatrical quality. You get them gifts. If you're a good seducer, you give them gifts that have some kind of personalized attention to them, that show that you're thinking of them, that you have entered their spirit, which is one of the chapters in the book. And I think more of a problem emerges in a relationship when the other person stops playing those games, as if they don't care anymore about you. They just simply wear whatever clothes that they wear, and they feel comfortable around it, but there's no effort involved. They stop taking you to those places that are special, that have that kind of magic and electricity between you, lots of memories. They stop, the gifts they give are very generic and obvious. They're not thinking about you in any deep way. And slowly that connection, that electricity that happened in the beginning, begins to wear away. And so, yeah, you can be, once you're in a relationship and you want it to be for the long term, several years, whatever, you're not going to be putting the same amount of effort as you did in those initial weeks. That would be tiring, and it wouldn't really work. But the sense where that other person is not doing anything, not putting any effort, they're just being themselves, just who they naturally are, I think is a great turnoff, and is what eventually dooms a lot of relationships.
Wow. That was so well said, and something I really haven't thought about. It's seducing really never stops, right? Even if you're in the relationship, you have to keep doing it. And you're right. If you're not playing the games, things can get stale. I think that's like such a good thing to point out. You have 24 seduction techniques, all very, these complex concepts to a certain degree. Just things that we don't really think about innately. And so I picked a few of my favorites, and okay, I want you to just kind of, maybe elaborate, or we can talk through them. And I mean, Robert's book starts off with a bang, because the first one is choose the right victim, which I love. I mean, this is what we're about over here. You said you choose only those who will be susceptible, right, to your seduction. And I wanted to ask you, are there certain people you don't think can be seduced? And what I mean by that is, have you heard the term fuckboy?
I'm sorry, I haven't.
Okay.
Educate me.
I will educate you. A fuckboy is a term that basically describes a man, usually, who can't be tied down, sleeps with a lot of women, says whatever he needs to say, to get you in bed with him. And a lot of these women are trying to date these quote unquote fuck boys and can't seem to lock them down.
Right.
So my question to you is that still someone that can be seduced, or are there people you shouldn't even waste your time on?
Well, you have to know, you know, what's, you know, who you are and who your natural appeal is to. You know, I know, for instance, there are certain types of women I'm in a relationship now, but back in the day, that I would never try because we're just way too different. They won't find me interesting at all. But, you know, I don't want to think like there's a really good seducer could almost seduce anyone. But the thing about what you're talking about, the fuck boy, to use your expression, is that that's person what I call a rake. I have it's one of the types of the male seducer. And a lot of women fall for that type, and they think that they can be the one to reform him, that they can be the one to get him to settle down into a stable relationship. And that is generally an illusion. That generally shows how far he has seduced you. Because you start to think he wants you to think that, and that's how he ends up getting you to sleep with him. But it's generally probably a bad idea because that's not how he operates. Mm-hmm. Now, there are cases of if you're like a siren and you're extremely good at seduction and you know how to play to his games and his weaknesses, perhaps you can lure him into a relationship. But that kind of guy is always going to be sleeping around. He's what he likes is the chase more than the actual relationship. So you're going to find yourself getting into a mountain of pain if you try and get someone like that to settle down. So generally, I think you have to choose someone that there's some, one thing that people make a mistake is you have to have, there has to be a kind of an electricity between you, a feeling that you're attracted to this person, that they have seduced you in the beginning. There's something about them in particular, their character, their personality, their way of being that has already seduced you. And if you feel that, if they kind of generate a lot of emotion in you and excitement, that will make your seduction seem much more natural instead of it being kind of cold and manipulative where you're trying different maneuvers on them. But if you seem totally excited by that other person and it shows up in your eyes, your gestures, your words, everything you do, that is extremely seductive and will kind of cast a spell on the other person. So that's really what I meant by choose the right victim.
Okay. So it's you really just need to make sure there is some kind of spark. There's something there, right? On both ends.
Yeah, but it's not something where people are, the spark isn't like we share intellectual interests. We read the same books. We have the same political values. The spark is more pre-verbal. It's more emotional. It's more sexual. It's more animal. It's like something you can't even put into words. There's something about that other person that makes your, you know, your blood boil or whatever. They affect you in ways you can't even control. So the spark shouldn't be like we have the same ideas about things. We like the same food, etc. That's the kind of the cliche, trivial way of a seduction. You want something that has like a deeper kind of emotional, a person has a deeper emotional impact on you. And it's not always the obvious choice.
Oh, interesting. And what do you mean by the obvious choice? It could be someone, for example, I one time ended up dating a guy that I had put into the friend zone, right? I thought he was just a friend and it would never go anywhere. And I didn't expect to have this sexual or romantic kind of chemistry with him. And that ended up happening. Is that kind of what you mean? It's not people who you expect always.
Yeah. I mean, so that person, I don't know at what point you realized that there was some kind of different possibility, but was there any kind of physical interest in him before this happened?
There was none, Robert. There was zero. And you know what I think? I think he read your book, The Art of Seduction, and I think he ended up seducing me over time. And then I ended up in that predicament.
Well, the chapter right after Choose the Right Victim is Friend to Lover. So going from the friend to lover is an incredibly seductive technique where you become their friend and their guard is down. And there's a kind of at least a connection on a friend level. And then when that person moves it to the physical, it's extremely effective. So maybe he was using law number 2 in that book on you.
That's, you know what? That's the thing, Robert, is this book can give you all the techniques so that you can put these things into action. You can seduce someone, but then you also need to read this book to make sure you're not out here getting seduced and bamboozled. So I think that's really smart. Another one that I just love is mixing pleasure with pain.
That's something you personally practice, I imagine.
It's my favorite thing. And yeah, I think a lot of these, like, I just innately have them. A lot of them I haven't. So thank God I have your book. But you said the greatest mistake in seduction is being too nice.
Right.
And I can't even tell you how many times I will be talking to my friends and they say, no, I need to call him back right away. I'm going to seem rude. No, I'm taking too long to answer. No, I need to do this, this, and this, or he's going to think I don't like him or think I'm being mean and he's going to, you know, walk away. And I always tell them, no, you're doing the exact opposite, right, of what you should be doing. And so mixing pleasure with pain, I want to hear from the expert himself, please.
Well, the idea is the mix of the pleasure and pain. So if you're only giving pain, that won't work either. You know, the other person will just end up giving up on you. Nobody wants to have something that's continual pain. But if there's too much pleasure, if you're too nice, people start to take you for granted. You don't seem worth it anymore because, you know, like you're so easy to get, right? So you want to increase your value in the eyes of the other person. And so it's the traditional game that women used to be great at and are not so good at anymore, which is playing hard to get. And in the playing hard to get, it's sort of the classic strategy of the coquette, which I've described in another chapter, is you blow hot and cold. So you're excited by the other person. You lure them in with the idea that you like them, that you're interested in them physically and emotionally, et cetera. And then when you start to sense that they're coming towards you, that they're interested, you take a step back. You don't return their phone calls. You don't return their texts. You let a couple days go by. And in the day or two that you let go by, the other person isn't going, man, she's so rude. I don't even want to be with her. Instead, he's thinking, maybe she doesn't like me so much. Maybe she's got some other guy going with her. Maybe she's better than I thought. Maybe she's in a higher class than I, you know, and she's looking down on me in some way. So the thought stirs in the head of this guy, I've got to go after her. I've got to pursue her, right? And so, you know, things are not so simple as I originally believed. So you want the other person you want to make them think about you. You want to make them fantasize about you. And if you're too obvious, if you're always returning their phone calls, if you're texting them all the time, if you're in their face too much, they're going to think there's nothing mysterious about you. There's nothing exciting about you. And they're going to take you for granted. You're going to seem too familiar. So I would say you mix in little bites of pain every now and then, maybe once a week, maybe every few weeks, to make the other person never take you for granted. You could, at a moment's notice, be interested in another person. Of course, when the relationship is solidified and there's something happening between you, you're going to back off on that a little bit. Not completely, but a little bit. And I think also a lot of guys make that mistake of being too nice.
That's true.
I think women kind of like, they don't want pain, but they like someone who can be a little tough, a little hard-edged. It shows like there's some dimension to the person. Also, being too nice reveals your insecurities, because we all know that a person who feels insecure is trying really hard to please the other person.
Right.
So the sense that you're not so insecure, that you're confident, means that you can step back and give them those little bites of pain every now and then.
Yes, I would never sit here and say I like pain, ever. I don't think most people would, but I appreciate when I know, you know, a guy is not going to do what's always expected, right? And sometimes he will kind of back off. And it keeps me on my toes and it just keeps me interested. And I think it works both ways. I mean, Robert, have you ever been interested in someone and they decide to back off a little bit or they don't respond to your calls, you don't run away, right? Like you just pursue them harder.
Yeah. So oftentimes in the old days when women were good at this and they would play hard to get, they were like testing the man. Is he that interested in him in enough so that when I instill this doubt, he's going to pursue me further? That's exciting because that shows he's really interested. He's really invested in it. But if he gives up, that means he doesn't have confidence. He's not really that excited by me. So many ways, when you do that little bit of pain, you're testing the other person to see how really interested in you they are.
Right. And you can weed out the people that don't really, really like you out right away just by playing that game.
I wanted to ask you, though.
Yes.
Can you give me an example of the kinds of little bits of pain that you could do? I'm interested in how you've used that.
I think I've always, this is another chapter in your book, is the sending mixed signals. And I think I've done the pain by, get ready for me to sound really psycho. I don't care to anyone listening. if I can tell, if things are going so well and they've been going that way for a long time, I just instinctively know they're either going to kind of get stale or I need to do something to mix it up a little bit. And I might cause a fight for no reason, you know, and I know it's bad, but it works. I might start an argument so that, you know, we can have some conflict that then needs to be resolved and then we can go back to lovey-dovey land. And I think I don't know if women were just taught to be super nice or what it is. But yeah, I think I've heard that complaint so much from women. You know, if I don't act too nice, then they're going to think I'm not interested. And it's like, men don't care if you're interested or not a lot of the times, right? They want to pursue you. They will like that.
Right.
This one, I really am just so excited to hear from you, is use physical lures. I think people assume when we're talking about seducing and we're talking about anything physical, especially for women, it's, oh, I need to be hot. I need to be a certain body type. I need this right hair color. I need to look this way. And the way that you talk about it is it's not the physical appearance, right? It's how you carry yourself.
Right. Well, we're basically, I'll talk a lot about this in my last book, The Laws of Human Nature. We're basically animals where a lot of our communication is nonverbal. And we think that words matter so much, but actually a lot of the communication that goes between people, we're picking up signals from them. We're picking up their body language. We're picking up their lack of confidence, their insecurity, or their confidence, things like that, their aggressiveness or their lack. But we can sense it like an animal can sense it in another person, right? Mm-hmm. So you need to be aware of the fact that the signals that you're sending are constantly being read by that other person, right? And so the physical lures that you're using are playing on the psychology of that man. And so often the sense of confidence that you have in yourself, the sense that if you think of yourself as a goddess, for instance, or as a movie star, if you have that image in your mind that I am that, the man will pick that up and it's extremely alluring. You want him to come chase you, or vice versa, you want the woman to come chase you. And you want to set up these little things that are going to lure them into your web. They're going to lure them into your snares. And so these physical things, they can't be too obvious. If it's all about, you know, wearing a short dress and perfume, mm-hmm. et cetera, it's too obvious. You become what you call, I forget what's the slew or whatever the word was.
Slew, yes.
You're expanding my vocabulary. Fuck boy and slew. I don't know where this is going to end or what I'm going to end up sounding like.
But, I love it.
So your physical lures are different from that, you know? It might be a style of dress that's different, that sets you apart from other women in a bar, something that might even be a little bit elegant or might be something that they've not seen before, but is exciting. And you want to kind of fit it to what you know about this particular man. And so men are often attracted to women who have a slight theatrical edge to them. It's not that they don't want a drama queen. They don't want someone who's too dramatic, but they like the slight sense of there's an air of something a little bit larger than life about this woman, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to create this in your physicality, in your presence. But if you're too obvious, then I don't think it works. Then you seem like everybody else. You want to kind of figure out who you are, what you're... And in the first part of The Art of Seduction, I give you the 9 types of seducers. Mm-hmm. And you want to figure out which type you are, whether you're a coquette, a siren, a natural, etc. So you wanted to do something that's actually going to excite him and kind of appeal to what you sense are his own inclinations and what will excite that individual more.
Right. And you talk about, you know, hand gestures, your tone of voice, and all of those things that I never seem to think about, and they're so important.
Well, I talk a lot about this in the chapter on the siren, but a woman's voice is, I have fallen in love with a woman before I've met her because of her voice, right? And there are some voices that are just so alluring, and it's going to depend for each man. It could be something that even reminds them of their mother in some weird way, but there's something soft. There's something, you know, slightly confident. There's a kind of breathy quality to it. It depends on the man, but your voice carries a lot of seductive power, as does your manner of walking, right? Mm-hmm. You know, your manner of walking it's a signal, like we talked earlier about nonverbal communication, signals your level of confidence in yourself and who you are and a lot of your personality. So how you carry yourself, if you think of yourself as a goddess or a queen or somebody who deserves kind of royal attention, it will show up in your physicality and it will have a very powerful effect. So yes, you want to reach the full gamut of senses. Men are more sensual than you imagine. They respond to smells, to touch, to voice, to sounds, not just to, you know, the hot looks as well. So the more you can kind of make them dizzy with all the different senses you're appealing to, that is where you're going to have more seductive power.
I love that. I never had a guy point those things out to me until this recent boyfriend. And I, you know, have tried to explain it to my friends, like, no, just my voice, like, you know, turns him on or like gets him off or whatever. And not a lot of people talk about that or like, you know, fully understand it, but it's so powerful. And I know it is because my boyfriend, you know, wouldn't shut the hell up about it for the first, you know, 4 months dating.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
So Robert is the fucking shit. He is an animal. I love him. We ended up talking, you guys, for so much longer than I expected. Way too much, like, package into one episode. And I really want to share it, all of it, with you guys. So with that, we are going to continue this conversation next week. And I would like to get into, now that I have my little Robert Greene pajamas on, questions, SOS, save our sleuths, questions of the motherfucking week. Our first question, mommy, sorry. These fucking sleuths. Alex in the background trying to get into my Sophie with an F solo podcast. Okay, anyways. Hi, Slew. I have a hack to make your ex reach out to you, even if you haven't talked in a long time. I did this after my ex and I had been broken up for almost a year, and we ended up getting back together for a few months. So what you're going to do is find somewhere near his house, a place he frequents or something of that nature, and graffiti your name somewhere you know he will see it. I chose to spray paint my name on a fence by the grocery store he shops at, and a couple weeks later, he reached out to me out of the blue just saying that he's been thinking about me. I have a pretty common name, so you'd have no way of knowing I painted it, and I swear that seeing my name in the graffiti caused him to start thinking about me again and get back in touch. This is genius. This is illegal. And I don't think that there is any crime more embarrassing to get arrested for than you getting caught graffitiing your own name on a fence. So just, you need to be wearing ninja clothes and just take care of that situation very carefully. This is kind of fucking smart, though. You're penetrating this guy's subconscious. See what I did there? Because I bet you they were penetrating later. Ooh. But I don't know. This is fucking insane, but I could see this shit working. And I do like that you pointed out, you know, only certain names can get away with it. I don't even know if I could get away with it. Do that many Sophias have their name sold an F? Yes, they fucking do. Absolutely. But I don't know. Maybe he'll be able to tell by my handwriting. Who fucking knows? All right, next. Honestly, Sophia, do you think it's okay to double text, or if a guy leaves you hanging, just let it go and he will reach out to you if he wants to? I have always been a sayer of if he wants to, he will. So usually when a guy doesn't respond to me or stops replying, I let it go and then wait to see if he ever responds. If he doesn't respond, well, then we never talk again, LOL. Are some guys wanting me to be a little aggressive or no? No. Like I said, if he wanted to, he would have. Great fucking question. I think if it's in the very, very beginning stages, like you guys have gone on, I don't know, 1 to 3 dates, I think you absolutely cannot double text. Like, that is really where you need to be the mouse and he needs to be the cat and you need to just let him chase. I think once you've passed that mark, this is how I play it personally. I really like to mix it up. So I won't respond to one of his texts for a day or two, and then I'll blow up his phone and hit him with the double text. Way more fun to just hit him with something he's not expecting. And if that's you calling him 7 times drunk, then so be it. But I think just always keep them on their fucking toes, basically. Don't be coy. But if you are going to do the drunk call technique, you got to disappear for like the next week and he like can't get a hold of you. So it's just, it's a dangerous game and you just need to play it well. Make sure if you do double text him, you're not just like, hi, smiley face. And then your next text is, hi, smiley face. Cause then you look creepy. Say something funny that he's not going to like feel pressure about, I guess. Okay. All right. Next. You have mentioned slow stroking several times in a negative way. What is slow stroking? I'm supposed to always jackrabbit or something. I like to slow it down. Is this not okay? What the fuck? Ooh, this guy is angry at me. First of all, when I say slow stroke, I have had sex not that many times, but I have had it where the guy just the entire fucking time was slow-mo. And there is a certain pace when it comes to sex. There just is. I also don't like the jackrabbit thing, so don't come at me for that bullshit. There's like a happy medium. And yes, I agree with you. Switch it up. You should be going at a more rapid pace sometimes and then like slowing it down. It should never be you going fucking 20 miles per hour on the freeway. It really shouldn't. It's like awkward. It doesn't even feel good to me. And you're listening to like Marvin Gaye. I don't. Just speed it up a notch. And if you're asking this question, that means you probably go too slow. There is a speed when it comes to sex. And figure it the fuck out. Usually, I would say communication is so important here. And I do think you need to make sure, you know, assuming you're a man, that the girl or another man is having a good time and enjoying themselves. This is one of those situations I'm going to go ahead and say no. Because if I was having sex with someone and then they stopped to ask me, hey, you want me to like speed that shit up? You want me to slow it down? Like, what's the rhythm like for you? I would uninsert his penis from my vagina and fucking grab the condom and choke him with it and strangle him and leave. Cause that, I don't want to answer that question. I don't know how to answer it. Like, just feel my body, dude. And like, just feel the vibe. And like, you just need to know a good pace. And you should be smart enough to be able to tell how I'm responding and the noises I'm making and what I'm saying, what I like and what I don't. And I'm telling you right now, if I'm being dead silent, that is not me just like feeling it so hard because it's so good. That's me disappointed. That silence is disappointment. Okay, next. Sophia, I love the podcast and you. Good content is good content, period. Thanks, girl. I was wondering how you personally feel about getting eaten out. Do you like it? Every once in a while, it feels great, but most of the time, it feels like someone's licking my inner thigh, LOL. Wondering if this is common or not, because literally guys will go down and every time in my head, I'm like, oh my God, fuck no. It makes me uncomfortable because 9 times out of 10, it doesn't feel good. And so I'm always verbally saying after like 30 seconds, you don't need to do that. Say what? Because like, why have someone go through the trouble of giving you head when it does not even feel good? Okay, well, girl, never say you don't need to do that. If anything, just be like, I'm over it. I'm not into this. Like, he needs to be under the impression he needs to do everything. There's no, you don't need to do that. But that's okay. For me personally, I love it. I think it's great. I think that's like how I had my first orgasm, actually. But I will say this. I don't like it on a first hookup or someone like I'm just getting to know. And here's why. One night stands to me are really fucking fun in the sense that I'm like, ooh, I'm here to just like be a little rowdy, a little raunchy, and to like put on a performance. I'm walking out onto the stage. I want to put on a show. I know that's not healthy. I know it's not how we should think about sex, but fuck it. Like, it's a one night stand. I'm going to do it how I want to do it. The reason I don't like for him to go down on me is I do think it takes me a second to get comfortable with a dude, but more so, I'm there for the show. I am not there to have an orgasm. I have never had an orgasm from a one-night stand, and I usually can't, like, the first few hookups. That's a lie. You know what? Guys, I'm having a post-dick appointment flashback right now on air on this mic. I have had a guy, our second date, go down on me. And I did have like a legitimate orgasm. So, but you know what? For the most part, I won't come. So long story short, I like it. Not the first time or the first few times I'm hooking up with a guy. It's very fucking normal to not like it though. Don't force yourself to like act like you're into something if you're not into it, you know? I have very good friends that fucking hate it. So this is not like a weird thing. I'm sure the fucking all the guys you date probably love that about you. So no, it's not weird. And absolutely, by all means, I think you can just voice to the guy, like, that's not my thing. Moving on. He's probably going to be like, I want to marry this bitch. I have to put zero work into this. This is like incredible. You know, even at 29 years old, guys, I'm almost fucking 30. I still will get a teeny tiny bit uncomfortable when a guy goes down there. And I don't know if it's just like the way I'm programmed. It's just, it's a private part. And it's just a little bit interesting to have a dude face to face with your fucking vagina. Like, it just is. That's something I need to get over. That's something we all need to get over. It doesn't bother me to the point that I'm not going to let him do it. And I'm not going to get comfortable after 15 seconds. You know, a vagina is a vagina, no matter how small and no matter how gaping hole it is, like mine. All right, guys, what a fucking week. I love you guys so much. Follow me on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter. I don't know where else I fucking am. Sophia with an F, Franklin with a Y. And please, as always, rate, review, subscribe. And I love you guys so much. I will see you next week.